So just a quick agenda review. This is a joint meeting of Prudentials and the Digital Verification Group that we are holding it immediately after the Verifiable Claims Working Group, which was the hour before for those people who are official members of that group, in which you have to be an actual member of W3C to participate in the calls. These calls are open. We're going to do introductions and reintroductions. We're going to go over the status of our current items and basically dive into the privacy and security requirements proposal discussion from David Chadwick. There is a draft that he has done. And then we'll close with a DIB check-in and some topics that Manu wanted to bring up, just sort of, you know, other parts of the W3C ecosystem that we may want to be aware of what's going on. So do we have any new people today?
You've got Paul Simmons here from the Global Identity Foundation. Manu suggested that we come along and see what's going on.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Want to tell us a little about yourselves and your interest in Prudentials?
Very quickly, Global Identity Foundation is really looking at, I think when you guys are looking at it bottom up, we're looking at it top down. It comes out of work out of Jericho Forum, an open group, looking at how we build a single global identity ecosystem that everyone can leverage. We're doing some piloting work at the moment with DECE, that's Hollywood, and Ultraviolet, led by Warner Brothers. And we're currently actually building a POC as we go, and we are looking at using the JSON LD stuff to do the underlying claims on it. So that's
great.
About where we are.
Well, welcome. So the other thing we do is reintroductions. Who do we have on? Is there anybody who hasn't been reintroduced ever in a session?
Yeah. To the group, this is Ed Bice. I'm based in San Francisco and work at a company called Medan, and we build open source softwares for journalists and translators, and we work on a product called Check, which is a verification and a collaborative verification and fact-checking platform, and we've been in the middle of the fake news world since before it was called the fake news world, and have recently been awarded a Knight prototype fund award to bring together media partners, platforms, and technologists to work on standardizing credibility indicators at the claim level, the article level, and the source level. So, and as part of that work, we're looking at how that how those indicators are expressed to end users, and how journalists are incentivized to contribute. So we have New York Times, I know that Evan was on a previous call, but Associated Press, IPCC, which is the journalistic structured data standards body, and Google, and provisionally some, and Wikipedia, and provisionally some of the other large platforms are interested, though not formally associated. So I'm very keen to draft on the efforts of this group, and to involve you all in what is a nascent process that we've just started.
Well, great. Well, thank you. Sort of moving on to our action item review. The first item on it is, you know, we've been keeping track of these work items, you know, in our agenda items. Do we want to have some more formal way of doing it? We could use GitHub, et cetera. Kim, do you want to say anything more about that one, or what's our, you know, what were your thoughts?
Yes, and let's see. So for keeping work items on track, I think for DID spec, we had a follow-up email. I don't remember if it was a narrow group or in the broader alias, but we had some discussion between Drummond and Manu about that. So let's get to that in the item number 5, the DID check-in.
Okay.
One I wanted to call out, though, was for data minimization and selective disclosure. So we did have some momentum with a group that looked committed to working on it, but Nathan, George, yes, it looks like you're on the call. You mentioned by email there are other groups that are working on similar work items, and I wanted to know who they are, basically, like, see if we're make sure we're not duplicating efforts, but then also work with any other groups that might be working on it. So we don't
just jumping in between there, Kim, just so you know, this is Lionel. I'm not sure if you can identify me by SIP ID, and I'm also want to remain very engaged on the data minimization and selective items.
Excellent. Thank you. Nathan, are you on the call?
Yes, I am on the call.
Can you give me
there's a couple other places where data minimization is coming up. There's some efforts at Hyperledger right now, and that's more specifically around the idea of blockchain-based systems, where we're talking a lot about signature schemes that support selective disclosure and also group signatures. There's a privacy and confidentiality group there that has started some cryptographic audits to try to inventory and show what kind of data disclosures different models are creating. And then there's also an effort there that's just starting now to try to make it so that there's some common code for selective disclosure schemes amongst the various projects at Hyperledger. We're trying to organize something for the year.
Nathan, can you give us a link or something? Because I've got a project starting up now looking at Hyperledger, so it could be I could overlap on that. How to give us a way to get into that we can put into the notes?
So I'll get a couple of links for the notes there. For development participation, my understanding is that if you want to participate as a developer at Hyperledger, you can go ahead and engage as an independent developer there. I'm Christopher Allen or some of the others might need to comment more on kind of what that process entails.
You know, I'm a member, but you do not actually have to be a member to participate in Hyperledger. So it's only for certain kinds of voting and things of that nature that's required. There are also some face-to-face events that are limited. But anyway, I wanted to move through the action items, and we kind of jumped to something that was a discussion topic for the end. But I think Kim, if you can add to our discussions, you know, action items for the future. We've got enough sort of task items and community items and things of that nature. It may be worthwhile having a community repo in our in our group, GitHub group, just for these types of things, so that we can, you know, keep track of, you know, who's doing what, who's committed to what, et cetera, rather than trying to do it all in these agenda items. So we should bring that up figure out what we do on that, and you can assign it to you and I. If anybody has done something like this in another repo, I've seen other people use GitHub in interesting ways for this, but I've not actually been part of a group that actively uses it. Continuing through the action item review, you were following, Manu, you were following up with Evan and Associated Press and Reuters, and I guess some people here are evidence of that. Did you want to say anything more before we close that out?
I just wanted to mention that our discussion around fake news has actually awoken a number of people to our work here. So Ed is here as a result of that, which is fantastic. We've also had really good feedback from the BBC, who may be joining in that work, and other areas. So that's continuing, but we're getting more responses to that than I was expecting us to get, which is great.
Cool.
The other, I guess, question is, you know, Ed's here today. I think there was we don't know where Ed's kind of discussion on the stuff that they're doing is going to happen, if it's going to be in the Verifiable Claims Working Group or it's going to be in this group. So the chairs probably need to get together between the two groups and decide where Ed's going to present the stuff that they're working on.
Okay. Yeah, Ed, I would also encourage you to look at the face-to-face meeting that we'll be having in October 3rd through 5th on Rebooting Web of Trust. And in last fall's Rebooting Web of Trust, we actually had some demonstrations of using verifiable claims for making statements, making evaluations about those statements, and then making evaluations of the evaluators of those statements as a demo. And then at the spring Rebooting Web of Trust in Paris, there was some interesting work on evaluating reputation systems, which is in effect what this is. Reputation systems are very difficult. So we've been doing a variety of work in, you know, kind of incubating ideas, you know, getting things onto paper at the design shops, and that might be worth your while to consider. And then we can bring it into the, you know, like DIDs and some of the other stuff you'll be hearing about later. What's incubated in rebooting often, you know, comes here. So. It'd be a good
thing
to do. Okay. Manu, can I strike that agenda item at this point, or do you have some more follow-ups?
Nope, that's fine. We'll all need to kind of follow up on it, but yeah, that one's fine.
Okay. Kim, you had an item of insights from Bob, fake news, and DC. Is that your email post?
Yes. Done, and I posted the link in the chat.
Okay. So the next item is in one we've had for 3 months, which is approved new name and mission statement. I saw that there were a few other minor tweaks while I was on vacation. Are we done now?
We are.
We are done. So has a call been made for last minute changes?
Yes. And okay. So the only follow-up that needs to be done, I'm going to double check with Manu, but so we need to send the updated mission W3C, and we also need to notify a certain set of other groups. So I'll be following up on that.
Then we'll okay. Okay. So if you can add those to the action items more specifically and delete the ones we've, you know, the first draft is done, that can be deleted. You've updated the instructions for the SIP client already. You've done a subscribe button for ensuring patent policy on that page. I think that's the end of the action items. Are there any action items that or commitments that people want to be recorded and listed for future meetings that we've missed here?
Not recorded. I'm on the queue. I think we talked about Ed. The other thing was I had an action item to follow up with Dane Larimer from EOS to see if they'd be interested in participating in this group. He and I had a good long lunch, and yes, they're going to participate in the verified claims work at some point. Specifically, it was around data minimization, but Dane's more interested. Seems to be more interested in just the verifiable claims aspect rather than the data minimization stuff. In any case, they'll be participating as the months roll on.
Okay. Great. So we're going to move onward to item number four, which is a discussion on privacy and security requirements for the credentials ecosystem. This was one of two work items that originally one work item and two different approaches to it were made. And David, you want to take it from here and tell us about where you're at and your thoughts and what you would like to have us review? Dave, are you on mute?
Thank you. Yeah, sure. Let me just send out the document short URL to the list so people can click on it to see it. So everybody should have got that now that's on the chat channel. Yeah?
Yes.
So, has everybody got it?
Yeah.
So if we look at that document, basically, I've listed the requirements under the normal CIA of confidentiality, availability, and integrity, but I've also added privacy and authenticity. And I wrote it, and then when I start to look at it in more detail, it seems to me that if the subject is the holder or the subject is not the holder, there's some very fine, subtle differences that perhaps need to be made to these. So my first question to the group is, when we read them through, should we have clearly spell the difference where the holder is the subject and where the holder is not the subject, what the difference in the privacy and security requirements are? So if we look at them one by one, you'll see where these subtle differences occur. First of all, availability. The user should be able to present her identity credentials to any inspector at any time, and the inspector should always be able to validate them. Now, if the user is the subject, that's clearly true, but if the subject is some third-party holder, is it equally true, and does it depend on the subject as to whether this third-party holder can present the credentials at any time to any inspector? So that's the sort of issue that arises when you think, okay, the holder is not the subject. Okay, I'll leave it for the comments on that one, shall we, first of all?
Okay. The speaker queue is empty. Anybody want to have a comment on that one, or that general thought or clarification?
So the thought was, it depends on agency. It depends whether the user has given their permission. As simple as that.
Yes, and again, there are two different, shall we say, scenarios. One scenario is where the subject delegates the credential to a trust party holder, and say this is an authorization to access a website or something, and then the holder can go and access the website on behalf of the subject because it's the delegate whenever they want to. But another case would be where the holder is not the delegate of the subject, but is perhaps a delegate of the issuer or something like that, and the case might be where the credential is a negative credential, and a service provider is granting access to subjects based on, let's say, their driving record, and they present their driving license, but this other third-party holder, which might be some authority, presents a negative credential to say this subject has points on their driving license. So in that case, the holder is not a delegate of the subject as such. In fact, the subject would probably prefer that the holder didn't present those negative credentials. So it gets rather, you know, you see how it gets rather tricky? I was waiting for comments, but
Manu's on the queue.
Yeah, it was just a general. Yeah, just a general comment. So yes, it does get tricky, and you know we're trying to make sure that we support all these fairly advanced use cases. General comment on the document, David. I mean, it looks great in that it's fairly simple and straightforward. It's a high level set of comments. Reading through each bullet item, I can easily think of tons of corner cases where the text doesn't necessarily hold true. I don't know if we want to nitpick on those things because, again, having just a good high-level intro to this stuff is helpful. So I was wondering where you wanted to take the document next. Do you want to try and refine the language, or do you want to kind of explore different use cases where we demonstrate what we mean by availability and confidentiality and integrity? What were your thoughts on where the document goes next?
I haven't actually given that a lot of thought, but I thought that it would need to go into the life cycle document. So we're having a life cycle document. There's also the data model document. Some bits of this will be needed, in the data model document, not necessarily all of them. So I think it's for the editors of those documents to then take this text and put it in as they see fit. As you say, this is a very high level document, which on the surface of it, when I initially wrote it, I thought it was, you know, it read quite well. But when you then start to look into the fine details, you then start to see little ambiguities, as we point out. You call them corner cases, yeah. And so it does need at some point more explanation because especially we're going to go for review by other people, security people, etc. They're going to say, well, it doesn't hold in this case, etc. So we're going to have to spell everything out, I'm sure, when we go for some review by security people. If they're saying this is your security document, well, what about this and what about that? You haven't covered that case, etc. So I think we do need to dive into more detail at some point in some document. And probably maybe the lifecycle document is as good a place as any for that.
Okay, I'll take in my cue item now. I'm finding this a little, too simple in some ways. So I put in a comment at the very end of the document. There was a research about kind of variety of different terminologies and reconciling them in that ResearchGate paper that has now been not quite adopted, but at least has been discussed as a Internet Engineering Task Force draft. And some of the areas that they really are dealing with is these kinds of pairings. Like, so in this example, the examples I do, they have this pairing of, so anonymity is you can't identify a subject within a set of other subjects, which if the opposite, the undesirable property is identifiable, which means you can do it. They separate that from unlinkability as the desirable perspective, items of interest in the system, undetectability, unobservability, et cetera. So I'm not necessarily saying you need to adopt the those specific languages, but there's an element of, okay, so, you know, what is the desirable property, and then from,
but also look at it from the attacker's point of view. What is it that they're trying to break? So, you know, what is their motivation? So you talk about, say, availability. You know, what is it from the attacker's perspective that they need to stop you from having availability? What is it that is, you know, that the attacker wants to try to do to try to stop you from having integrity? And I think if you kind of take that same approach, look at it from the attacker's point of view, you may be able to flesh this out, but keep it simple. That, you know, seems to be one of your goals. Does that help?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're right. That is a completely different perspective, looking at it from the attacker's point of view. So I'll certainly do that. I think that's a good suggestion, and see how it might alter the wording of this.
Okay, Manu, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, so I went, looked at the link that Christopher put in there and kind of followed it all the way through. So there is an RFC, an actual published informal Internet Architecture Board RFC defining privacy considerations. I think we would set ourselves up for failure if we didn't build off this work. So, you know, that's a bit of, I mean, they have all kinds of things that the RFC is called Privacy Considerations for Internet Protocols, and it has gone through a ton of, peer review. And it talks about things like surveillance and intrusion and misattribution and correlation, disclosure, exclusion. I would imagine that in our ecosystem, we are going to have to cover every single one of those privacy threats if we're going to survive the public review portion of the spec stuff. So again, I mean, you know, at a surfacey glance, I did like how simple your introduction was. But unless we cover every single item in RFC 6973, we're not going to make it. So that as additional input, you know, hopefully you're going to be looking at that document and.
I've got it now in front of me. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'll go. That's no problem. Go through that.
You know, and I definitely do feel like, you know, that. You know, there's no harm in saying, okay, go look at you know, this RFC 6973, and you know, here in, you know, the section where they're talking about you know, unlinkability, you know, this is something that makes our protocol have an additional requirement or an additional attack surface for that, you know, is not obvious from the RFC. So, you know, that also can be another useful approach to it. You know, you don't have to
copy.
Well,
also, if you look at Section 6, it's titled Threat Mitigations, and they then go through the way that you can actually protect your system to a greater or lesser extent. And they say that it's notoriously difficult to measure and quantify privacy. So they give you some pointers there, like on data minimization, anonymity, pseudonymity, etc. So that's a good pointer, that document.
Okay.
If we show how we are using their guidelines for threat mitigations, then I think that helps us to go through a review.
Okay. Mike, go ahead.
So I've been, you know, I'm a cryptographer working on selective disclosure protocols right now. So I'd love to get more involved with the drafts if you guys can point me to the one besides the thing that was just shown in the channel. But, and the, like, specifically the ones that Manu is working on, I'd like to, you know, be helping and build on top of those.
Yeah, we have a separate work item
that is specific to the data minimization and selective disclosure, where we want to kind of do a survey of what are the, sort of lesser or even non-cryptographic techniques around data minimization, and then talk about those things that are, blinding and other cryptographic techniques, and even, talk in passing about some of the ZK type of stuff, and sort of give, here is the space and particular class of problems. And I know that Jan Kamenisch said that he was also available for kind of a review pass on this, and that he might be able to pass it on to some of his students for stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we have a lead author yet for that. Several times people have encouraged me to take lead on it, and I'm not sure I can do that. But Lionel, you were also interested. I know Kim was also interested. So that's a separate work item.
Right. So, I mean, I'm also interested in methods that aren't cryptographic either, like general awareness.
Yeah. I definitely feel like we need to cover those. I think in many cases, we have a tendency in our field to throw cryptography at something when, in fact, it really doesn't necessarily add security, it adds complexity. Where it's just simply from a policy way can address a lot of different types of things as securely. Not everything, but there are, it's there. So I think, Kim, you're next in queue.
I actually took myself off, but just a quick note. Yes, we are still trying to find a group to get critical mass around data minimization. And actually, one thing that we've been chatting about is the idea that this RFC looks really helpful for helping to tighten the focus of that. So I think, again, we still need some more drive behind that group, but this looks like a good start, and I think we just need more concrete objectives in that data minimization work item. There is overlap between David's stuff as well, so we'll be syncing up with him on that.
Okay. Manu, last for this agenda item.
Yeah, just to underscore that this work's really important for the Verifiable Claims Working Group as well. One of the criticisms that the working group had when the charter was approved by W3C was that we weren't doing enough surveys and deep dives into privacy and data minimization techniques. If we produce a paper demonstrating that we have looked at this stuff in detail and demonstrating how the decisions that we've made on the technical specifications match what the broader ecosystem has suggested we do, then that reduces the chance that we're going to get formal objections on the technical spec in about a year's time when it goes to recommendation status. So again, it may seem like this work is a lower priority to some folks, but it's really important to get the technical specs all the way through the W3C standardization process.
I know in my case, I'd like to really kind of puzzle through, there's some broad requirements because they're more protocol oriented that this community wants to make a statement on. And then when we start getting more specific with the data formats, I think they also have some very more specific demands of to say, hey, if you're going to use this data, you're in whatever way you're doing it, you have to do X, Y, and Z to secure it. And with this, this data format does not explicitly do this. You have to provide it externally. Let's move on to the next agenda item, which is the DID check-in. So DIDs, decentralized identifiers, are was incubated at Rebooting Web of Trust. There have been a number of initial implementations, prototypes in Evernym. Folk have done one. Kim and I and some others did one on Bitcoin. I know that Consensus is doing one on Ethereum. So now that we're actually beginning to do these and actually implement them, we're discovering some complications and issues that we'd like to have resolved. So we're probably going to be having these check-ins on a regular basis to just see where things are at. Manu, is there anything kind of new to report in the last month or so? Or what's your lowest hanging fruit or thing that needs to be discussed?
There is, but I'll go after Kim. Kim's on the queue.
I was going to mention that, specifically some things we wanted to talk about were Veris 1. I don't see any objections to taking that on. It looks like a good DID method to add, so Manu will talk to that. Also, Manu, I was hoping you could talk to the email thread that where Drummond sort of outlined how he's hoping that we can make progress before rebooting Web of Trust. That's all.
Is there an email? Which email is that one? Or is that a private email?
I'll dig it up. I don't remember now.
Okay. Manu, go ahead.
Sure. So let me start with let me go in the order that Kim mentioned things. So there is a new DID method spec that Digital Bazaar has published. So this is the Veris 1 DID method specification. It is specifically a public permissionless ledger designed for decentralized identifiers and storing DDOs. The spec link is there in IRC. There is a live site, again, just landing page. There is implementation behind this live site here. There is an implementation behind this based on our web ledger stuff. And the hope is that this becomes not yet another DID method specification that we can use to talk about the BTCR implementation, the Sovereign implementation, the our implementation, and the Ethereum folks implementation. So that's good. We have four active DID method specs being developed at this point. Work on this. So that's just info on the Veris 1 DID method spec. There exists a spec and an implementation, or the implementations being created as we speak. Okay, so how does all that impact the work that we're doing? Because the Kim and Christopher and the rest of that group worked on the Bitcoin, the BTCR DID method, that raised a number of questions on the DID method spec. Specifically, things like should we start talking about proofs instead of digital signatures? How exactly are we going? What exactly does the data model look like? How does guardianship work? All those questions were kind of re-raised once the BTCR spec was implemented. Meaning Digital Bazaar, we had this super old DID method that we've deployed to authorization IO. We're now revamping that to the current DID method spec. We now have three totally different data models as suggestions, as input to the DID method spec. And whenever the Ethereum folks give us their input and the Sovereign folks give us their input, those will all go into the discussion around the core DID specification. So the hope is that we line up a number of really important questions and have some discussion on that during the month of September, so that when we get to rebooting Web of Trust, we have a set of issues that we really need to get kind of finality on. We need to have a good deep conversations about it, dive deep, and then come to some technical decisions so that those that are implementing the DID method specs are not blocked in any way. So there is discussion happening. Let me see, where's the DID method? Give me a second to find this issue. So there is an issue that was raised by Kim. Thank you, Kim. So there was an issue raised by Kim where we started talking about this, you know, do we use proofs or signatures? And we've put up a couple of straw men as discussion points. The good news here is that we believe that, you know, Dave Longley has spent a lot of time thinking about this, and we, you know, spent a decent bit of time taking everybody's input. We believe that we have a more generalized approach than what's in the current DID spec, so that's good. But we need to make sure that it addresses everyone's use cases. So that gets us to next steps. My hope is that over the next couple of weeks, we can discuss the structure, just the minimum viable DDO, what makes a minimum viable DDO, and then focus on like one or two use cases to make sure that that approach works, and then have some kind of proposal going into rebooting Web of Trust. So I think that's where we are right now. I think there's plenty of stuff to discuss. We just have to prioritize discussing the right things so we don't end up going down rabbit holes when unnecessary. So I think that's where we are right now. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you very much. Q. Okay, so a quick question in just my first scan of this, there was some issues raised around being explicit about what keys could be used for signing claims as opposed to keys that are used for control and update. What did you and Dave think about that?
In general, we agree that that is what should be done. The mechanism that we're going to propose is that those two things are very separate things and they belong in different areas of the DDO. One of them is effectively used for authentication and the other one is used for write authorization. So there are two use cases there. And you're very explicit on what key can be used for which use case. So authentication versus authorization to update the DDO. There are other sub use cases that we have identified, like if you want to limit a private key or a certain key from updating a very specific field in the DDO, we have that as a consideration as well. So, for example, what happens if I want to have my university automatically update my education credentials in a DDO? It's a very crazy use case. But, for example, that being, you know, possible was considered. So I think, you know, there's general agreement that, yes, we want to be very specific when we're talking about proof types and what providing a certain proof can do. And as a result, the data model in at least the Veris 1 DID method spec proposes how we achieve that. So I think the group needs to discuss that general approach at this point or in a future call.
Okay. Thank you. David, go ahead.
Right. One of the things that I'm going to paste a link to one of the comments in that issue. One of the main things that we were looking at in terms of restructuring the DDO is separating out authentication from authorization and making it very clear that you have an authorization section where you can specify these entities are permitted to do these things. And then and then in terms of authentication, you can talk about, and these are the ways that these entities are allowed to authenticate to prove that they are who they say they are. And so a lot of this was teasing out those pieces and making it so that you can make these things extensible so that you can say you're authorized, for example, in a DDO, almost everything's about what fields you can write to in a DDO. So the authorization section that we pulled out is effectively saying these entities can write to it, and you can further constrain that and say they can only write to these fields, and you can further constrain that and say, and they may only authenticate themselves using these methods. And so we tried to tease out the basic primitives there, separate the pieces out, create some clear abstractions so that people can combine these things in ways that make sense for their ledgers and for the different things that they want to control.
Okay. Okay, so any other, you know, we're crammed up on time a little bit. Anna, did you want to close or?
Yeah, just to mention that, you know, so the general read on the DID spec right now is that we discovered that there was a conflation between authentication and authorization. Unfortunately, someone has put us on hold and we don't know who that person is. So keep talking. Slow down. So there is, there we go. Never mind. It was Kim for whatever reason. So there's a conflation in the current DID spec around authentication and authorization. We believe that we have done the proper layering now to tease those things out, which means that the DDO is far more flexible. And after we tease those things out, right, after we got the layering right, we went back through the Yoram use case to make sure that we could actually support a really complex use case like the refugee crisis one. And we believe that we do. So, I mean, we have all kinds of stuff in there like pseudonymous biometric identification, guardianship, and we were able to use data structures to walk through the entire use case, and we believe it supports that. So the good news is that we believe we have a solution, but we absolutely need to discuss that with the group over the next couple of weeks, and then hopefully present that at Rebooting Web of Trust to make sure that we have something that meets all of the use cases that people care about.
Yeah, and we need to get the two Ethereum people back here. So, okay, so. I think we had one last person in queue. Ryan, do you want to close us out?
So, Manu, can you just clarify, was the conflation in the DID spec, was that in the logical intent of what was specified, or was it, were we talking about easily misunderstood wording?
No, logical intent, design flaw.
Okay. I would love to talk with you offline about that.
Sure.
Okay, so on our agenda, we wanted to close with larger ecosystem discussions. The first one was the blockchain CG shutting down. It's supposedly shutting down because of no interest, but you know there were other issues. There were some things that they were under discussion there. Manu had one that he wanted to present, but I'm also, I mean, Kim and I have also run into an issue where, you know, we're using an identifier encoding that it's going to be a BIP, but a Bitcoin Improvement Protocol thing that they have this specifically been told to remove references to other coins. So the problem is that our scheme can work with multiple blockchains. So there may be a need for a registry just simply that has a number or an encoding thing to say, okay, you know, here's a transaction that's on Bitcoin, here's a transaction that's on Bcash, here's a transaction on Litecoin. Here's a transaction on, you know, some other things. So there are a variety of things that we thought we might be able to move through the blockchain community group that now are questionable. Manny, you want to say something about the project you were working on with them? The web
legislation? Yeah, there was this early and still ongoing futile attempt to try and align basic data models across all blockchains. So we did a big survey of blockchain protocols and discovered that just about every blockchain, as folks on this call know, just about every blockchain at a fundamental level is effectively a state machine with events that that transition the state machine from one state to another. So there's a spec called the Web Ledger Protocol that would enable blockchains to express their internals in a standardized way. Think of this as like HTTP for blockchains, kind of, sort of. That was being worked on in the blockchain CG. Since the blockchain CG is going away, there's no home for that work. It could be that this group picks up some of that work, but again, I think it's a bit of a stretch. The Veris One Ledger is built off of this spec. So, you know, if we do adopt the DID method spec here, it might make sense to work on it here. But in any case, I don't think that this is a central work item for the group, but it is being orphaned. If this group doesn't pick it up, we will do a W3C member submission for the spec so that it still has a home at W3C. But we were just giving this group the option to pick it up if there was interest here in a standardized protocol across multiple blockchains.
Okay. Any comments on that or concerns, thoughts? So, you know, I've been interested in the general concept of the API. Sometimes feels a little entangled with your implementation. So how to untangle that would be, I don't think it's anything but semantic. But I like the general idea that, yeah, you know, a lot of stuff can be expressed in a common interface. And I do believe there are other things that, you know, they need to be, there are a number of other things that need to be registered, in a place, and if the blockchain group isn't the right place, I'm fine with, being a placeholder for a while. You also had a item on the Microsoft thing, so the non-DIF.
Microsoft has launched their own blockchain. It's and released a white paper for it. It's a really interesting thing. It feels very much like sovereign. So I was wondering what the sovereign folks thought about that. And I'm also wondering about the interplay between that work and the DIF. There didn't seem to be interplay between those two projects, but I was wondering if somebody in the group that knew more about Microsoft's new blockchain had any comments, specifically the Evernym folks.
I know Drummond's not here today. Anybody else? There are a couple of other people. Any other thoughts?
I'm not really sure what specific work is being referred to. I know Microsoft's doing a whole lot of different things. They've had some very, I would call them LDAP-centric identity projects that are related to blockchain before, but they weren't very sophisticated in terms of how the claims and proofs in those systems worked. So I'd be really interested in getting any links that folks have to just taking a look to see what's going on there.
Yep. Let me put that link in there. Hopefully this one works. And then there's a white paper, too, that I'll try to find. Yeah, it's the Cocoa framework thing that they're doing. And they say, oh, it's just a framework for blockchains, but then when you actually go and read about it, it's a blockchain. It's not just a framework. It looks like a direct implementation. And it kind of follows Sovereign's architecture.
You know, I'm also a little confused between sovereign versus indie, which is the Hyperledger version of sovereign. So.
Yeah, and here's the white paper, link to the white paper there.
So Christopher, I think the answer to that question is fairly simple, and that is just like you might have a MySQL database and then you might install different instances of it, the Hyperledger Indy code base is the code base for Sovereign, and Sovereign is a particular installation of Hyperledger Indy. When you're running a network, everyone who's running the same instance of that network is part of essentially the same database or the same shared state, and Sovereign is a global public utility installation of Hyperledger Indy.
Okay. Well, we'll have to do some more investigation on that. It's 10:03. The final item was time to at the TPAC, which is conveniently in California this year. I would say yes, but we would need sort of a presentation to sort of say what it is we're doing and whatever. Does anybody know what the verifiable claims working group is? Are they presenting something? Oh, I'm sorry, Moses. Moses, you had a comment. I skipped you. I was just trying to deal with closing. Moses, are you on mute?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay. Yes, this is Moses. Hi, everybody. And a quick note, I'm talking to David Robert from Avatar in Paris, and he told me that he and a bunch of other people in Europe are working with the ISO, and he's definitely coming in October to try to bridge the two groups, but he said that there's a lot of activity around an equivalent or a competitor to DID over there, which he agrees is like duplicated work. So I think we should try to make a better effort to collaborate with them.
Okay.
Which October? Is that Boston October or somewhere else?
Yeah, he said he's coming to Boston, he said.
Yes, Boston, 3rd through 5th.
Okay.
So let's start, Chris, maybe get on the agenda just what exactly we'll be doing there. And also, I sent you an email about my role there. Maybe you can get a chance to look at that too.
Okay, will do. But I would say let's add to our action items that yes, we want to make a presentation at TPAC. I've registered, but we're obviously going to need some help from people who've been to TPAC before. I haven't been to one yet, as to what that should be.
Chris, this is Jim Burnett. Just very quickly, the Verifiable Claims Working Group chairs had planned beginning in September to start discussing what we wanted on our agenda, because we have two days at TPAC. And so one of the things that we wanted to talk with you about, so maybe the chair should just talk a little bit offline, is whether there might be some opportunity for some joint overlap time. I mean, officially CGs don't get meeting time, but that doesn't mean that if unofficially we can't allocate some.
Okay.
So let's start that process now. Now's the right time to be doing that.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, well, so we're going to go ahead and close the meeting for today. Kim, you have an inkling on what our, is next week going to be our DID day? It's the day after Labor Day. Focus on that next week, or what do you feel like is the biggest priority?
Well, actually, we got a request from Christopher Weber to talk about, I forget the name of the project, but we want to give him some time for that. But besides that, it would be nice to focus on DID heavily.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Does anybody else have something that they want to present either next week or the week following?
I think it'd be useful to talk about the did approaches. So actually talk about a data model for a DDO and present the two to three different models. And just make sure that the group is spun up on that before we get to rebooting.
Yes, we should send a specific invite to Christian. He's been here before, but to say we want to have him talk about his DDO, I think that would be a good invite. Okay. Thank you very much, and talk to you next week. And everybody have a good Labor Day weekend.
Thanks all. Bye.
Bye.